Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Now we've done our work for the hour.
It's all done.
Yeah, we can. Yes. Man, I've got a lot of stories here.
You do?
I got a lot of subjects here to talk
about.
You
mean you prepared for the radio program?
Boy, did I ever. And I haven't even...
We've barely touched exactly one of them. We got
so
a simple
far.
Question about the Federal Reserve, and we spent most of the hour talking about what money is.
And we had a question last hour about how much money do you need in retirement. We will address that, but
yes.
We have somebody on the telephone. 773-1400 is one of the numbers you can call. The other one is?
1-866-597-1400.
And caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Would you all discuss the currency wars and the possibility of the dollar losing its status and what impact that might have on
sure.
the economy and on
that's actually a
market.
Piece we wanted to talk about this week.
Well, actually, I think that between that and the other question that we have, we could use the next 5 hours. But we will. We'll talk about it.
Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much
okay.
for the call.
That was a good question.
Just a real quick, brief, let me not go into a lot of detail because we have another question to answer first, but the BRIC block is talking about creating a currency. Did you read about that?
Well, I read about that. I also recognize that the BRIC block, the BRIC block?
Yeah, I'm calling them a BRIC block now.
The block BRIC?
I'm thinking BRIC block is Lego, so it's easier in my mind to remember them.
The BRIC block. Anyway, yeah, and I also know that they are panicked because with investors are apparently pulling money out of every one of those countries
yeah.
in a hurry.
That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China.
Yes. Do you know what the... That was interesting. That was cool.
We've got a battery... phone back there going nuts.
Do you know what inflation is running in India right now? No wonder they want to start their own currency.
Yeah.
Like 12-15% a year?
Yep. And China is dipping its toe into 7% inflation, which is terrifying to them. Because if they lose control of that, they lose control of everything.
Then the Russians are very, very concerned about a collapse of their local currency.
See, this is why I wanted to keep it brief, because we could take it apart bit by bit. And the reality is that their move towards that has nowhere near the stability of the euro, which has nowhere near the stability of the dollar. So we'll talk about that more.
The euro has stability?
That's a good statement.
Anyway, we will go into currency war. Number two, the probability of the dollar losing its status as the world's reserve currency is about the same as a major asteroid smacking into the middle of the United States and wiping out civilization.
I would say short term, you are correct.
Short term.
Yeah, we're talking about 10 years. That's short term when we're talking about this type of thing.
Well, if we have a long enough time period, eventually an asteroid will smack into the Earth.
Yes, and if we have a long enough time period, historically, currencies shift. It used to be the pound was the lingua franca.
We had a first question. How much money does a person need to live in retirement? Now, I can answer that one.
Okay, go for it.
How much money does a person need to live in retirement? It's really a simple calculation. Sit down with your other person who may be living with you in retirement.
Or by yourself if you're
alone. If you don't have another person, yeah. And look at how much money you need to spend a month to live comfortably in retirement. And once you have a dollar value, don't worry about inflation for a few minutes. Actually, you probably shouldn't be worrying too much about inflation anyway. But sit down and then say, okay, if I retire at whatever age you plan to retire, what would my Social Security check or transfer payment electronically using little bitty electrons flying through space into my account be? In other words, how much money would I receive from Social Security? Will I get money from something else too, like a military pension or whatever else you got? So you write those down, subtract that from that total that you need to live. Remember, by the way, to remember that the income tax is in effect in the United States, and so you'll need some extra money to pay taxes. But you've got this, so you've got a number. You've got an end result number there. Certain fixed pension payments, including Social Security, will be coming in. You will need additional money, a little bit of research on medical expenses and things like that. certainly wouldn't help anything, hurt anything. But now you've got a number. Now, next question. How much growth in your account consistently over a long period of time can you reasonably expect to get? If you put it in the bank, what are CDs paying? 1%?
If you get a good one, you get a good one at 1%.
So if you're saying 1%, you're going to need a lot of money. But the bottom line to it is just, you know, again, let's just say that you think, okay, I can get 6%, which is not a bad number. You take your annual need for money after having accounted for Social Security and stuff, and if you think you can get 6% over a long period of time, and you want a fixed income with no adjustments for inflation, then you divide that 0.06 into your annual desired income, and you will have a number, a really big number. That's how much money you would need to invest at 6% to generate that money. Now, it gets more interesting if you think we're going to have inflation in the future. As soon as you think we're going to have inflation, and any math freaks out there are going to probably, you know, have apoplexy or something at this point. But let's just keep it simple. Simply take, let's say you thought, well, okay, well, I'm going to get a 6% return in my investments forever. I can get 6%. But I think inflation is going to be 3%. So you subtract 3 from 6. So your net, if you want to adjust for inflation, your net rate of return then is 3%. Now take the annual income that you want divided by 0.03. You will then see a number that is so big, it will probably make your brain quiver, which is why it's probably smarter to get some professional assistance if you have enough money to retire. And because, for instance, over a long period of time, the Texas Teachers Retirement System, using modern portfolio theory with some minor modifications, has managed to set an expected return of 8% a year, and over a long term, you know, 10-year moving average, they hit it. Whoa. So now if you could get 8% a year and you think you're going to have 3% inflation, you could divide 0.05, 5%, that's your net return, into this annual income you want. You could then get that income adjusted for inflation. That is it in a nutshell. It's a simple process. The big question is, do you have enough to do what you want to do at the rate of return you think you can get? And unfortunately, that's one of the things I was looking at today and doing my research.
You were unfortunately?
There's a lot of economists who are saying right now that the middle class in the United States is not investing enough money. They're not saving enough money. They're
it's
not
true.
Investing enough money to retire. And they might as well get warmed up to work to at least age 70.
Yeah.
And I suspect
Social Security is not providing as much as we think it should.
Well, the point is, if they want to live it, you know, if you get $1,500 a month, or if there's a couple of you and you get $3,000 a month from Social Security and you can live on $3,000 a month, that's cool.
See, I'm going to say something radical here. I realize it's radical is that the Congress turned it over and said no way, and so it didn't get any further than back when George W. Bush was talking about privatizing 1/10 of the money that goes into Social Security.
Which I hope they don't.
If they allowed us to open up a whole range, just, you know, open it up to the whole market, and I can choose whatever I want in there,
mm-hmm.
that would work.
For you.
For me.
But not for most
people.
For
a lot of people, it wouldn't.
It would be a wealth transfer from people who take their Social Security and put it in the market to people who take it away from them.
Yes. The
average investor is one of the most beautiful statements of statistics I ever heard.
Average investor.
The average investor gets a dramatically below average rate of return on their investment.
Yes, that is true. It is very true.
But it is a true statement. And the average investor tends to buy into the market, into the stock market when it's up, mm-hmm. sell out when it's down. Right now, clearly, the average individual investor is pumping money into the bond market.
Bad idea.
And long-term bonds, and they're reaching for higher and higher yield bonds.
Those
and,
are really the wrong ways to go.
Which is where our next crash is coming, folks.
Well, this is continually amazing to me. We have indexes. They're known as the average.
Now, is it indexes or indices?
Both. It is actually both.
It is?
Yes.
At the same time?
It is both at the same time.
So there's a dual reality here?
Yes. Just like you can have dual and both, both being correct words for this situation, you can use indexes or indices.
So they could be two things at the same time, which means that the indexes or indices tend to be schizophrenic.
If you wish. What I'm saying is that these averages are exactly that. They're taking all these stocks and they're just averaging the movement. And yet most people, when they invest on their own, do not come close to the average. That's not even just, I mean, that's just average stocks, 500 stocks averaged together with some weighting on their size. It isn't saying these ones act better than others or this one's a better performing. No, they just say 500 stocks, put them in here. And yet the average investor can't beat them. The average mutual fund manager that is investing in the S&P 500 consistently beats it, but they're doing a full-time job doing it.
I wouldn't say the average mutual fund managers. The last time I looked.
Average mutual fund manager that is consistently investing only in the S&P 500.
Ah, but I wouldn't even say that too, but go ahead.
You wouldn't say that. I would.
Because I've looked at all the S&P 500 index funds,
mm-hmm.
and about 20% of them slightly outperform the S&P 500, about 80% of them underperform because of its
I'm not talking about index funds. I'm talking about people that invest in the stocks in the index. That's a very different thing. Most index funds underperform the index because they have fees and things that are on top of it.
And again, the last time I looked, to be geeky, the S&P 500 was performing at the 38th percentile among large cap blend funds.
Yes.
Whoa.
So, and what the S&P 500 is a large cap blend fund. So if it is in the lower, almost the lower third.
No, it's 38% below the top.
Oh, okay. All right. So some people are not doing so well out there.
Yeah, in
saying.
Other words, 37% of the funds, but the majority of the money.
Yes.
Because those funds that are in that upper
37%
have a lot more money than the ones that perform less well. But the average investor does not perform as well as those funds because the average investor has a tendency to load up in those funds when they feel very, very optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a tendency to jump out of the funds when they feel very, very pessimistic. And investing according to your feelings is certainly an exceptionally good way to lose a lot of money.
Yes.
Anyway, excuse my geekiness this morning.
So we had two questions. One was, how do you know when it's enough? And you were almost done with that.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, basically, if you have enough money that at a rate of return minus inflation, you think... You know, you run the math and you say, I can get a 5% net return. I'm comfortable doing that. Net of inflation, which means about an 8% rate of return net of expenses. Then you have a number, and once you have that number, you're probably quite comfortable in retiring. Now, the question, of course, it gets a little more complex, is how do you get to that number? How do you get enough money in an account to be comfortably able to retire? And I'll tell you one of the things that the popular media tells you that is just wrong. Right now, these target date funds are scary because the closer you get to retirement, the more they load up on bonds, which historically have low returns over the very, very long period. Recently have done very well, but probably will go into bottom falling out mode in the future. The reason when they build these things, they build them more towards being able to defend them in court than getting you to retirement. And let me tell you something. A lot of people think that at the day I retire is the last day I'm investing.
Nope. That's
in
not
fact,
right. Yeah.
Your real life expectancy for a couple should be your target date. So if you're 60 today, 60 years old, and you and your wife or you and your husband are in good health, your life expectancy, joint life expectancy, is about 100, which means you're 40 years of you've got 40 years of investing left. And you need to invest as if you have 40 years of investing left, but you also need to recognize that you're going to need to be taking income from it it becomes a little more complex than most people are ready for, which means, by the way, you need to have separate accounts in the unit, separate accounts within your retirement portfolio. You need to have enough money in there for 2 or 3 years of down market where you could take it from, and you need to have the rest of the money invested in a relatively, and I want to, relatively aggressive but highly diversified position where you can get a lot of growth over there. And when you've got enough time to get the growth, that's what you need to do. And study after study has said the same thing. Unfortunately, those target date funds and the way people invest in this rule of thumb knee-jerk reaction is generally a really, really, really good way to outlive your money. And it's, you know, my gripe, if I could change something in the educational system, I'd probably remove Algebra 2 as a mandatory subject and insert Finance 101.
I don't know that anybody'd pay more attention to that than they would to Algebra 2, though. Well, it'd be more important in their life, that's for sure.
If the opening statement is, you got a choice one of these days, kids. You can either be old and broke and working your butt off and go to any grocery store and watch the baggers. Even locally, I've noticed that there are baggers who are obviously well into their golden years who are carrying bags of groceries out to the car for people. You can either be one of those, or you can be one of the people who's buying the groceries and going out into a nice vehicle and going home to a nice house where you don't work.
I actually feel a little bit guilty when I am taking my... I never accept help going to my car with my bags, and which is... I mean, I'm the guy that's supposed to be offering these people in their golden years help getting the bags to their car. I feel horrible when they say, can I help you with your bags?
Yeah, let them take them to the car and then tip them. Now, a lot of them won't take tips because they're not supposed to. But, you know, several years ago, I noticed down at Sun City, in the Sun City area, you know, if you're in Sun City and you have a nice house in Sun City, you think, man, you got it made, right?
Yeah.
And I went out to the new HEB that opened up near Sun City.
It's not so new anymore.
Well, at the time.
Yeah.
Super HEB, new and all of that. And I was shocked. The cashiers and baggers were all heavily wrinkled, gray-headed or bald people from Sun City who, and they, every time I ask them, I said, it's interesting that you're working. Oh, yeah, well, I just wanted something to do in my spare time, as they wrinkled their eyes in pain. Wrinkling their eyes? That sounds kind of weird.
How do you wrinkle your eyes, anyway?
Well, we haven't talked about the dollar losing status, but we got a caller on 773-1400, so we're going to take the caller, but we will get to the dollar losing status and currency wars and so on. So, caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
All right. Hey, thank you. Hey, I'd like to get some information on what's the best way to start saving for my daughter's education.
What kind of education?
College education.
Aha! So we're not talking about daycare, or we're not talking about Montessori schools, or, you know. Okay.
All right.
Do you want to handle that?
Sure.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for the call. We will answer that.
I can answer that in one word, carefully.
Yes.
All right. Anything else? What's the best way to educate to
pay for the education of a
child? Man, there's a lot of different. There are a lot of different ways of doing this, and so there isn't necessarily a best. Boy, don't you love when people answer like that?
Yeah.
Actually, I like, for most people, this is not for everybody. For most people, I like the idea of doing a 529 plan.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you need to be careful how you do that and where you invest the money, and you need to educate yourself a little bit before you jump into that.
Yeah. One big thing, which is why you said it's not for everybody, is you need to talk to your daughter. This is paramount. This is
what if she can't talk yet?
Well, then talk to her anyway. Give her
while you're changing your diapers, right?
Right. I'm paying for your college. You better do a good job. No, this is a Peter Pan syndrome might happen there. What we're looking for here is to make sure that your goals and your children's goals are the same ones.
But if they're in diapers, it's kind of hard.
Yeah,
to tell.
Well, I think you're both wanting to change the diaper when she's crying and you're changing diapers. So that your goals are the same place. You're both. She's
exactly
happy when you're
right.
You're happy. She's not crying anymore. Everything's good. All right. with college, a 529 plan is really amazing for paying for college. But if the child decides not to go to college, it's very expensive.
Well, if you have more than one child, you can just shift it over to another child.
Well,
or another family member.
See, that's what I'm saying. You need to start talking to your daughter soon to figure out if you need to start having more kids to take the money that you're putting in the 529 plan if she doesn't want to go.
Is that the process?
that's what I was thinking. It's complex.
We tried this. And that's why we wound up with five kids.
And none of them got any 529.
Remember, I asked you, do you want any more brothers and sisters? Sure.
Yeah, it's okay. Fun. I like to play with Mike. Yeah. So, yeah, that is an important concept.
You didn't have 529s when you were a kid. I hate to break this to you.
And in approaching this with your children, also explain the monetary aspects. This is something that we were just talking about just 5 minutes ago about the education system being sorely lacking. If you're investing money for a college education, the kid needs to know about it. They need to understand the process and the sacrifice, but not have a guilt trip over it. Have some excitement over it.
And let me throw something else in there if I could.
Please do. And that didn't say how to invest it. That was just some of the other benefits of investing. Go ahead.
You want to talk about how to invest?
No, you go right ahead.
Okay, what I want to throw in is it was an article. There was a report today. Actually, this last week. It was a report that came out this last week from some economists. It actually came out from several sources at the same time. 12.8% of the people who are earning minimum wage. And I want you to think about what is minimum wage, like $7.50?
Yep, or $7.25, something like that.
Have college degrees.
So also be aware of what the degree is in.
Yes, so going to college by itself.
Unless you have a job lined up for you, marine biology is probably not the right choice.
So one of the things that's very, very important, I know this is not the question you asked.
Cultural anthropology, that might not take you. Wait a minute.
You got that one, buddy.
You have a degree in cultural anthropology.
With a degree in cultural anthropology, you can get a commission in the Army. That's what I did.
All right. Good job.
But the point is that it's really important when we talk about college. A college education is not the key to a better life. It's one of those little things about statistics that we don't understand. The fact that a person with a college education statistically makes much, much, much more money than a person that doesn't have a college education doesn't have any meaning to the individual. The fact is, there are people with college educations who are making way below average incomes.
Yes. College education does not mean you get a good job. It means that you have a college education.
So the key is having a good education that fits both the aptitude and desires of the person being educated. Obviously, the ability to pay for that helps tremendously. But I can also tell you something else that's very, very important to understand. I know of some very, very successful people who started out in community college, did well enough to get scholarships for the next 2 years. I know some other people locally who are working their way through college, taking a few courses at a time, not developing a lot of student debt. There's a lot of routes to this thing. If you have the money in the 529 plan, turning it over to a teenager is probably not the most brilliant thing you could do with it.
Correct.
Having the money in the 529 plan with a good investment plan built and an education plan built on top of the investment plan and communicating that for many years to the person who's going to get the education and allowing them to discuss this with you is probably a pretty good way to go. So it's a complex process, takes a lot of education. It isn't easy to get it right.
Right.
So like that.
There are places that you can go to get some more education on that. American Funds has a really good no-load program on 529s.
That is a Virginia-based 529.
Right. But if you I'm not saying that you should go there and take their 529. What I am saying is that they have a lot of education on how to invest mm-hmm. there on the 529.
I think Vanguard and Fidelity and some other people have it too.
But yeah.
Just get yourself a good education on the best way to invest towards having a 529. You know what
I think the biggest thing to save money is, again, to talk to the child in question
yeah.
as the time comes, because the penalties on not using that money for secondary education become rather steep.
Well, it's not secondary. You use it for any education.
Oh, any education, yes.
And you use it for grandkids. You can use it for, hey.
School of Hard Knocks. Not School of Hard Knocks.
I will make a recommendation to anybody who's serious about investing. Go to Morningstar. Pay to become a premium member and read a lot there. They are relatively objective. They got a lot of advertisements on their pages, but that's okay. And if you read the articles they have on investing, man, good stuff. Vanguard's got a lot of good stuff that you don't have to pay for that you can read.
We believe very strongly in self-education. There's a point at which it becomes more work than it's worth. When you're doing a full-time job and then you need another full-time job to manage your own investment portfolio. We're kind of prejudiced there. That's what we do for a living.
No, but, we write regulatory disclosures for a living.
Right. But what you do to get to that point where your portfolio is now large enough that and more complex than you like to deal with is you have to self-educate to get there. And that is true if you're using a broker or not. If you don't self-educate, you're at the mercy of a salesperson.
Well, I'm going to disappoint the guy who was waiting on the story on currency
we'll hit it
wars.
As soon as we get back from the commercials.
We're going to do commercials. On the other side of commercials, I'm going to talk about currency wars, and we're going to talk about currency wars and the United States losing its position as the reserve currency of the world and all that
or
kind
not.
Of stuff.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it not losing its position.
Well, we can talk about both sides.
Okay.
We need to be equal. Okay, we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we promised we would talk about currency wars. Ta-da!
Yes, this has been in the media quite a lot lately.
In a galaxy long, long ago and far, far away. No, long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away, there were currency wars.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. All right.
About as real as the currency wars that are going on today.
There are people outside of the United States.
Really?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
How do you know?
I've been there. I've seen that there are people out there that spend their lives wondering how they can move away from the dollar. They actually do. There are people out there that are very unsatisfied that the American dollar is the international currency. Iran is one of those locations that has a lot of people that are feeling this way. They don't want to sell oil for dollars because we have set up all kinds of restrictions on who they can sell to and all kinds of things because they like to...
Like no one.
Yeah, they like to give weapons to people that try to blow us up. So we don't like them, or we don't like that action anyway. North Korea would really like if the international currency was not the dollar. The essence of this is the reason why this is kind of the same question that we had the first hour about what is money. Only that's not really what they were asking. They were talking about the Federal Reserve. In a currency war, something needs to replace the currency that's in question here, the dollar.
In a currency war, you're trying to lower the value of your currency so your stuff is cheaper to sell abroad.
True. So like what China has done in the past, historically for the past probably 40 years, they've locked the yuan to the dollar. They've had some
is
easement.
Is it renminbi or yuan?
Both.
Oh.
Yes. And they've locked it to the dollar, and they've had some easing on that, so that this is part of the reason why they're having inflation right now. It's because they've eased that a bit to allow adjustments. They were keeping their currency really cheap, so it was easy for us to buy things from them, but harder for them to buy from us. But they recognize now that they are not a net output country. They have a balance of trade in the negative now because they're bringing in machines from Germany and they're bringing in raw materials from Africa so that they can export. What they've recognized, and internally they're becoming consumers, what they've recognized is that if they keep their currency really low, it's great for sending stuff out, but if they're bringing more things in than they're sending out, they're losing money on it. So they have decided to let their currency inflate a bit, which is, we referred to that to some extent earlier.
Well, as far as the threat of the dollar losing its position as the world reserve currency, there isn't one right now.
There's nothing to replace it.
Not only is there nothing to replace it with, the dollar is holding its value, and you're going to have a hard time getting your mind around this if you've been listening to people who are bad-mouthing the United States. The dollar is currently holding its value better than any other currency on the planet, period.
Yeah. The euro is fluctuating like mad. At the news of a Cyprus bank failure, the euro shifts 5 to 8%. And this is Cyprus is 0.2% of the GDP of
the point that they are saying now, for the first time, we're going to let banks fail. We're going to have the depositors and any depositor over 100,000 euros and the bondholders and the stockholders lose their money. And all of a sudden, the euro starts to get shaky. I still say, unless there's some fundamental change, I'll be really surprised in 10 years if the euro is still there its current form.
This is the worst decision that they've made in the entire stretch of the recession doing this, and they've made some really bad ones.
And, you know, it's really the only reason, in my opinion, right now the euro still exists as a viable large-scale currency is because there's a lot of people who want to keep propping it up so that the United States will not have the only large-scale currency on the planet. There's a key thing that let's see, where did I get this today? I got to find the Wall Street Journal, March 26, 2013. Foreign investment in U.S. dwarfs American money going abroad. And, of course, because of the fact that bad news sells papers, the article is slanted negatively, like, economists are worried about the fact that the United States is becoming more indebted to the world. Now, in this particular case, what this means is about something approaching 20, now hang on to your hats on this one, $20 trillion more was invested into the United States. Now, I don't mean we sent money abroad. I don't mean any of that stuff that we normally account for when we talk about deficits. There was about $20 trillion invested, not saved, in the United States by people from outside the United States last year, more than what we invested in foreign countries. Now, there's always a reason behind these things. And when we have $20 trillion, roughly, somewhere between $16 and $20 trillion, more invested in our nation than we're investing in other nations' goods and services. And when I say not goods and services, companies. In other words, around the world, people voted with their money, which of course they had to convert to dollars to do that.
And they're still doing that, China in particular.
Right. And they invested. And I want to emphasize this, not loaned, not spent, invested $20 trillion more in the United States than we invested overseas. Why? Folks, despite all the bad mouthing, you are living in the nation that has the most stable government, most stable economy, best prospects for growth, best prospects for everything you want to list going forward in the world. And people are sending their money here to invest it because they believe in what we are and what we're doing.
Yeah, if you consider, for instance, the things that get us upset in the United States in our political structure, We're arguing right now over how much to cut and whether or not to raise taxes. And the taxes that we're talking about raising amount to, as a percentage of the whole of taxation, about a 2% change. That's what we're arguing about here. This is our big moment where we're threatening fiscal cliffs and everything. We're getting very dramatic about a 2% shift in revenue, one way or the other. That's where we are. And I don't think it's a problem that we're getting dramatic or that we're getting heated, because it's important that we make these decisions now. Otherwise, we will turn into places like the rest of the world. They're arguing in Europe over whether or not their whole system of trade and regulation of trade and currency and every other form
of... Whether their currency will even survive.
Yeah. What do they replace? If the euro fails, this is what they're debating. If it fails, which is a big, big possibility, what will they do?
Yep.
The government has to have a run-up time to replace a currency with another currency. If the whole euro fails, they're stuck. They really have a lot of issues that could go wrong there. The United States, it's never been even hinted at in the past century that the dollar might be shaky, that it might fail. Because the reality of the situation is that in extreme situations in our past, we've had much higher taxes to pay for wars, to pay for all kinds of things, and we can do it. The Greeks are not so good at extreme situations. They would much rather say, oh, no, we don't like this. We would rather go back to whatever it was before. The United States, we're our core. The American dream about ownership and about creating things that people are willing to pay us for, that is the reason why the rest of the world looks around and goes, that's where I want my money. Because if you think of Iran, what is their export? What do they create? Well, it's some oil. Okay, what about China? Well, China is creating things that we invented. If you look at... Look at the patent office, and you'll see something amazing. The Chinese have this massive percentage of the population of the world sitting there. And they invent far less than we do. And by far less, I mean single-digit percentages of what we invent. Go ahead.
I need to correct myself. Mm-hmm. I gave wrong numbers just a few minutes ago. They were giving quarterly numbers in the report, but they were totals, not quarterly numbers. I hate it when they do that.
They solve for annualized on a quarter?
What it boiled down to is the amount that foreign investments exceed U.S. investments total.
Uh-huh.
Is, in other words, the investments in the United States versus investments overseas jumped to $4.7 trillion.
Okay.
In the second quarter, it's now down to $4.0 trillion. They were given this as if it were quarterly. Last year, the United States attracted $3.1 trillion in foreign direct investment.
Okay. That's a lot.
The numbers,
of money.
Yeah, but I said 20 a minute ago, and it's not even close to 20.
Right. Well, that
Sorry
is,
about that.
That is larger than China's economy.
So.
That's in 1 year, other people put more money in the United States than all of China's economy, which is the second largest economy.
And they are, by the way, the largest foreign investor in the United States.
Yeah, and what I'm saying, I was actually just speaking of China. Mm-hmm. That concept, when they look around, they're not innovating. They don't have the rights to the intellectual property when they innovate. Somebody comes and takes it from them there. They already are copying things that we do. So it's very normal for them to copy things that they do. Because of that, they have to wait for us to innovate before they copy it. They recognize where, this is a great statement, where the bread's buttered. We're the ones that are providing their ingredients. And Germany is providing manufacturing materials and equipment for them to create the things that they're copying from us. Until the world can look around and say innovation is happening I mean, where would you say innovation is happening in the world? Really?
United States.
The United States.
With some exceptions.
There's some exceptions. Australia is doing some pretty amazing stuff, but, you know, and there's places in Singapore, and there's jewels sitting out there. And then there's this massive pile of wealth of innovation mm-hmm. that is the United States.
We got to do some more commercials.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, the bottom line to this is that whether we like it or not, the Federal Reserve is doing, and it's ridiculous that some people don't like it, the Federal Reserve is doing apparently a very, very, very high quality job of maintaining the value of the United States currency.
Preventing deflation and
inflation. And people have come to realize that across the world, and they're voting with their money. The Chinese basically think we're the best investment in the world. Oddly enough, they actually think we're a better investment than they are, which should tell you something. I'm not sure what.
I don't know what it says.
We are, we're going to break for commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of The Personal Wealth Coach.
Divorce attorney.
And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake.
McClure. We've got about 7 minutes left in the hour, and we were talking about the health of the dollar just a few moments ago, but we also have a couple of other things we'd probably like to talk about this hour. Do you have, I mean, you know, like other than the fact we mentioned earlier that the markets are at record highs, but it doesn't mean anything because the record highs that the Dow Jones Industrial Average is hitting and the S&P 500 hitting are basically very, very close to where they were 13 years ago. So it's not like it's a big deal. And the economy has grown. Earnings have grown dramatically since 13 years ago. And the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 levels that at that time were unjustifiably high are now amazingly low. Things change over time. And what else we got to talk about?
Well, there's a couple of things. Something to be aware of. This is something that kind of reared its head about 2 years ago. But something, it's tax season. We don't generally purport to offer tax advice, but this is one that seems to be smacking people around in audits lately. If you pay more than $1,800 a year to someone, and that's very very easy to do. For instance,
$1,800.
Okay. If you're paying a babysitter $50 a week,
okay,
you're at $2,500 without any problem at all at the end of the year.
All right.
The government expects you to pay taxes for your employee.
Only if they're only your employee. If they're clerking for a whole lot of people and you're paying them,
that's
different.
If you're paying them and they work for a company, that's true. If you're paying them and they are a part-time employee for you and a part-time employee for other people, the IRS is smacking people around on this. This is a story that's just come out about whole series of people in a neighborhood that were paying one person to babysit. And they're all being audited, and they're all being told that they should have been withholding taxes and
should have been withholding taxes or needed to submit a 1099 because they paid the person that much.
One or the other. They needed to do one
or
the
other. Yeah, okay. So really, in my understanding, and I may be wrong on this, you've got a different take on it, is that you don't have to withhold Social Security and all that kind of stuff, but you do have to submit a 1099. It used to be $600. Is it higher now?
It's $1,800 now.
So at $1,800, if I pay somebody more than $1,800 a year to, let's say, clean my house or mow my lawn or whatever.
Well, that $600 for 1099 still exists.
Then I'm required to provide them with a 1099 and send it to the Internal Revenue Service. And fortunately, they don't enforce that one too hard. But if you do get an audit and they find out you're doing it, they will definitely slap you around. And you will definitely wish you had done so.
Well, this is the thing. And it's true that there it hit the news over the $600 thing because a lot of people pay $600 to all kinds of things, and it's from a business, generally speaking, that the $600
was talking
about.
You're not required
about.
To do that, but if you have an individual that you're paying more than $600 a year to,
you've got to send a 1099.
Right.
Now, this $1,800, it falls into this really sneaky area. The IRS doesn't like you to give 1099s to employees unless you've had a conversation with them at great length about the meaning of being a contract worker versus someone that you're employing. And that's I'll send you the
dude,
story on this.
The,
you're making noises like it's you like you're having trouble, but this is something that is it is happening and it is quite painful and something to be aware of. But we're almost out of time for the
hour.
Yeah,
we are. So, you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We maybe coincidentally, I don't know, write a lot of disclosures and on occasion actually manage investment portfolios for our clients. Actually, we spend, frankly, we in all reality, we do spend the vast majority of our time managing the portfolios, not writing disclosures. But this time of year, it's kind of like tax season. We spend an awful lot of time writing disclosures and focus on that really, really tightly and try to get it right. But if you would like to contact us, if you have enough money invested that you are either at or approaching the point where you can live off of that money, I think it's probably important that you hire an independent investment manager who's not working for a brokerage firm. And that's what we do. We are, right now, fee-only investment managers, and that's what we do. We work only for our clients. And you can contact us. We have voicemail over the weekend, obviously, and then Monday we'll have actually live people in there. Locally, telephone number would be 947-1111.
You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. That's, again, voicemail waiting. Or you can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
Actually, it's Jeff at tpwc.com or
Jake at tpwc.com.
That's not Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
That's, you're absolutely correct. I'm
actually
glad,
had
I'm glad
somebody,
you could
I had somebody who pointed that out to me last week. So they tried sending an email to Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, and it didn't go anywhere.
Well, maybe we need to make an email address named Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
Well, that'd be cool.
Yes.
We'll be back next week with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. The free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.